My name is Emma Martin, and this is the Lazy Keto Mum Podcast. If you are looking for help with keto and low carb, you have come to the right place.
Guys, I have a really awesome lady with me today. Her name is Rochelle, and she is the no-nonsense naturopath. And actually, Rochelle's been quite transformational in my journey and quite inspirational. And I keep going, can we do it? Can we do it? Can we do it? She's like, oh, all right. No, I don't think she actually rolls her eyes. I think we have a lot of fun. Hi, Rochelle. How are you?
Hi. Good. And I don't roll my eyes.
No. Sometimes, you know, you feel like that when you're pestering because you have so much information on gut health and all of that sort of stuff. And I'd love to pick your brains about that today, gut health, hormones, et cetera, because I'm trying to understand that myself as well. So you'll help not only people listening or watching, but you'll help me too. So I know you've been running some 12-week courses, and we'll talk about that in a sec. But I just wanted to kind of give everybody a snapshot of when we met. It must be 3 or 4 years ago now, and I think I'd only just started keto.
Yep.
And I walked into the health food shop where you were either consulting or working, and I remember you showing me the Donata ice cream.
Oops.
Well, there was an oops because I went out, I bought I think it was peanut butter, actually. I'm like, oh, sugar-free, yay. Now, I think I was only maybe 6 months in, not even that, to my keto journey. And I went out to the car and I ate the whole lot. Well,
but you still only got a few carbs out of that.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah, the carbs, I don't think I left the loo for like 2 hours. So now I don't hold you personally responsible because I ate the whole thing. But, yeah, we got chatting and, you know, the rest is history. So what I wanted to chat to you about, like what have you been working on at the moment?
Look, there's just so much information and everything turns over so quickly in the field of gut health and we're learning so much. My focus for the last year has been on my Fatigue to Fabulous program, which is basically – well, essentially for anyone, but, you know, particularly women and busy mothers and, you know, we're all dealing with too much to do. We're stressed. We've got brain fog. And I have the Fatigue to Fabulous program, which teaches a lot about the impact of good nutrition, obviously, but also sugar and how that can be detrimental to your brain's processing for energy, for instance, and hormonal health and 12 weeks of lots of different stuff that you can do to, look, I'll call it what it is, revolutionise your life, because very few people come through the other end not going, oh, my God. Yeah. So that's kind of where I've spent my last year producing lots of information around that.
Yeah, you really have got the knowledge, and I think one of your superpowers is to translate that knowledge into something that's tangible. So, and I will come and do your course at some point because I need to understand some of the stuff that you're talking about. There's a lot to unpack in what you just said.
Oh, isn't there? Which yep. is why it takes 12 weeks, but anyway.
Well, there's a quick sugar summit coming up. Yep. So let's unpack what you said about sugar and the gut. I think there was a link there that I heard, or at least good nutrition and the gut. So I guess the first question, I've got two questions in one. What is good nutrition for the gut? And what does sugar do to the gut?
Oh, my. you don't ask quick questions. Okay. Good nutrition is providing your body with ample amounts. Like we're talking abundance here, we're not talking about restricting things, ample amounts of the nutrients that we require to function perfectly. And not giving yourself and feeding yourself things that are contrary to that. Oh dear. Okay, to start this sort of thing off, I've got to put it into perspective. We hear a lot about the importance of gut health and the gut-brain axis and all of this sort of thing. To put it in perspective, we have about 30 trillion cells in our body. We have over 100 trillion microorganisms in our body, in our gut, in fact. So be under no illusion that the signaling that those microorganisms shoot out all over the place far outweigh what our own cells are telling us. These microorganisms run our body.
In our gut.
They do. From our gut. It's astounding. So how we need to look at gut health is that we have 100 trillion new best friends, and we need to look after our best friends so that they look after us. For instance, so we'll quickly touch on hormones. 90% of serotonin, now serotonin's our happy hormone, 90% of that is produced by the gut bacteria. 80% of melatonin is produced, which is our sleep hormone, produced by the gut bacteria. Now, we have our gut-brain axis, which primarily responds through the vagus nerve up to our brain. We all think that these hormones are produced in the brain, but what really happens is the majority of our hormones, and may I say also vitamins and things like that, are produced by the gut bacteria, and they travel through this gut-brain axis instantaneously, and then, you know, the brain tells the body what to do with the information. So our microbiome, particularly in our gut, but we do have other microbiomes. And in fact, the gut's not the biggest microbiome, but it's a very important microbiome. It runs our body.
So how do we look after that? Like, if it's so instrumental in what's happening in our brain, what do we do to look after it?
Lots of different things. Okay. The biggest impact that we can have, a huge impact we can have, I won't call it the biggest impact we can have on our gut health, is we want to look after, let's just talk about bacteria. We have yeasts, we have parasites, we have worms, we have really lots of different things. And, you know, we look at yeast, for instance, and think it's bad. We have yeasts that do have major functions in the body. But let's talk about the bacteria. What we need to do is we need to feed up and provide ample nutrition. The same thing goes for anything living. Give it what it needs to survive and don't give it what it doesn't need. We need to feed our good guys so that they have a bit of defense against the gang members, the dodgy bacteria, the bacteria or the yeast or the fungi or the whatever that are detrimental to our health. If we can strengthen up the good guys, they'll just knock the gang members out of the, you know, out of the turf. Yeah.
So then what do we feed? What feeds the good guys and not the bad guys?
The biggest impact that we can have on that sort of thing is having a diversity of fibres. So we're talking, let's say, particularly in the realm of keto, we won't talk about fruit so much as vegetables. We need diversity. So not huge amounts of anything, but little amounts of everything. Mm-hmm. In Australia at any point in time, and it's, you know, about the same everywhere else in the world, but in Australia we have between 300 and 500 different plant species that we can eat that are available to us in any season.
Wow.
There was a study from the University of Sydney that looked at all of this, and 95% of people routinely ate 12.
Yeah, because we get used to what we...
And when you think about it, peas, corn, capsicum, cucumber, lettuce, potato, carrots, you know, that would be about right. And then, you know, the next 2% manage to claw their way to 20. Realistically, we need between 20 and 30 different plant species every week to feed the diversity of fibre lengths for our gut to survive.
So stir-fries.
Absolutely. What I challenge in the Fatigue to Fabulous program during one of the weeks, I challenge everyone to actually go to the where you get your fruits and vegetables and pick something that you haven't used before, come back, use it, tell me if you like it, show me what sort of recipe, so that the group members get an idea of the breadth of what we can actually do.
Yeah, that's really cool. And actually, I routinely do that. I think just because I've got a curiosity, I'll try new herbs and try new things and new ways of cooking. And I think that food can be exciting and it can still be simple and
absolutely
not have to think about it. So, okay, let's car park that for a tick. We know that vegetables and fairly low carb fruits, if you're on a ketogenic diet, are going to be good for your gut microbiome. Let's flip that coin over. What are some of the foods that bring out the bad guys and hurt the good guys then? What should we be avoiding?
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, people following you maybe are attuned to being keto. Sugar is huge. Okay. That's a no-brainer. That particularly feeds a lot of the yeasts. They go mad, but feeds lots of the less friendly bacteria do seem to thrive on sugar, but also we know that sugar drives inflammation and that sort of thing, so it kind of feeds back a bit.
Yeah.
Now, it's not just as simple as feeding the gut bacteria. I guess we need to have a healthy gut wall as well. And we know things like gluten increase gastrointestinal permeability. And lectins, gluten is a lectin, but lectin does that as well. Now, there's a bit of controversy around lectins. I'm trying to be moderate in my view of lectins, but lectins do play a huge role in increasing gastrointestinal permeability. And they are found, and including gluten, in your grains and in legumes and in nightshade vegetables. Now, I don't like nightshade vegetables, things like tomatoes, capsicums, eggplants, potatoes. I don't like to tell people to remove food groups and really cut things out because it makes life difficult. There are certainly things that you can do to these vegetables to decrease the lectin content. I think maybe particular attention might want to be paid to that as we go along as well.
Interesting. So there's two things we need to talk about there. Firstly, can you explain lectins for people who don't kind of know what that is?
Yep.
And secondly, gastroimpermeability?
Gastrointestinal permeability. Leaky gut.
Leaky gut syndrome, whichever listening would probably be familiar with. So can you explain those two things? Like, what are they?
Okay. Firstly, lectins, of which gluten is a lectin. Gluten is a pretty low-powered lectin. Gluten gets a bad rap, but they both do the same thing. Lectins are a chemical which essentially in fruits and vegetables, or in certain fruits and vegetables, is the plant's defense system. And, in fact, certain lectins and amounts of lectins can kill us.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, very interestingly, 5 uncooked kidney beans will kill a person in about 5 minutes.
What?
This is why we need to soak and cook.
Now, well, it's a great way to knock off anyone you don't like.
Yeah, and in fact that happened in America, and I have a paper on it somewhere in the depths of my computer. They ran a healthy eating program for children in the community and they brought them all to the community centre and they fed them beans, you know, amongst other things. And they had 40 hospital admissions with diarrhea and vomiting because they hadn't cooked the beans properly.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. So just anyone listening, if you're going to try that with your husband or somebody you don't like,
naturopath approved.
I'm just kidding. Nobody would actually do that, right? But it would, you know, just saying. Okay, so what then does lectin do? It can be toxic. What do the lectins do inside that? What does it do in the gut?
Okay, so what lectins, and we'll include gluten in this as well because gluten does the same thing. I mean, it has a myriad of chemical roles, but one of the most obvious ones in this context is that when we ingest gluten or lectins, it causes the body to produce a hormone called zonulin. And zonulin actually increases the size of the holes in our gut. Now, when we're talking about that, we should actually go back and talk about what causes the holes in the gut in the first place. And that is generally yeast. Now, another big thing that we need to think about with respect to gut health is sleep. Everyone requires 6 to 8 hours of sleep a night. Mm-hmm. I know people say that they can survive on four and all of this sort of thing, but apart from it's the time when our body does housekeeping and when our gut bacteria flourish and make hormones and vitamins and blah, 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 blah. Overnight, when it's dark, which is why shift workers have a lot of problems with obesity and things like that, but when we sleep and it's dark, so it suits our circadian rhythms, our good gut bacteria consumes a kilogram of yeast from our gut.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my response too. Wow.
Is that now, why nutritional yeast is beneficial?
No. Well, no, not specifically. Okay. We have a lot of yeast in our system and it is the food source for our good bacteria. Now, I know this to be true too because, you know, as someone that sees a lot of clients, I do have those that are, in inverted commas, cereal weighers, you know, the people that weigh themselves the same time every morning. And some of them would come to me and say, I don't understand. I will go to bed and then get up the next morning and be heavier. And I said, well, did you sleep well? And I said, well, no. Well, that's because your body didn't actually consume that kilogram of yeast, apart from anything else. You know, we need to talk about fluid intake and, you know, influx into cells and stuff like that. It's not just the yeast, but a kilogram's a kilogram. That's a lot.
Especially if you are weighing and you're relying on the scales rather than how your pants fit. So there you
absolutely
go.
There's another reason that we shouldn't. Scales are.
Yeah, the scales are absolutely like this. It's not, you know, the guilt cycle and all of that stress stuff that goes along with it. Could we just take a step back? I know you were going to say something. So, okay, what you're saying is if we look after our gut health by feeding it healthy food rather than sugar and processed food, I'm just speculating that, like food
in
boxes.
Oh, absolutely.
Then we can actually not only repair our sleep, because we're starting to fix our hormones, we're repairing inflammation, and so we're also losing weight, fat at the same time?
Well, we're increasing the right hormones, absolutely. So the brain is telling the body it's in a better position to lose weight, because when our body, regardless of whether we're talking about gut health or liver health or brain health or anything, whenever we have a stress on our body, it puts our body into a protective mode. And it says that particularly with fat, we need to store fat for winter. We need to protect ourselves because we may not survive. Now, the body doesn't discriminate on feast and famine with respect to food. We don't have famine in Australia, but we do have stress.
Yep.
And so if we don't have enough sleep, if we have too much stress, if we're not feeding ourselves properly, we will go into that protective mode and our body will hold on to everything. And it slows everything down, which means hormone production doesn't work as well. Your nutrients don't go into your cells. And if your nutrients aren't going into your cells, they're probably not going into the bacteria either. And so it's just this snowball in the wrong direction. Whereas when we start to reverse that, everything starts to come good. Now, if you're increasing your hormonal health and increasing your cellular health, your gut bacteria will be better as well. So, therefore, that gets even better again. So we snowball forward in the right direction. It's transformational.
Oh, without a doubt. How you feel, and then you if you slip off and you go, wow, is that how I used to feel? And it's like, I just thought that was normal. So you're right, it is transformational.
It's really interesting. This week I've been having check-ins, post-Christmas check-ins with all my fatigued to fabulous people. And, look, I've said to them all, don't stress over Christmas. Do what you feel is right. Have fun. And they all said, well, yeah, I did overindulge a bit for a couple of days, but I felt like crap. And that is because they are used to a new normal.
Yeah.
And I said to most of them, you do realise that this was how you were feeling all the time and that was your normal. So everyone's got this new normal of energy and hormonal control and good skin and ageing well and energy, and it all comes down to proper nutrition. It comes down to abundance and not restricting things because we don't want to be into that protection mode, and treating our new 100 trillion best friends the right way.
So let's touch on our 100 trillion best friends in a minute. But what you're saying is so right. Like last night I was teaching the end of my Get Through Christmas and New Year course, and I'm saying, okay, how did you feel when you started eating, you know, the pavlova or the sugar or the chocolate or whatever? And they're like, oh, my God, I feel tired, I feel bloated. I'm like, that's how you used to feel. And you're right, it's the absolute new normal. So I think part of the thing, you know, going into the new year and people are like, oh, I'm just going to go to the gym and blah, blah, blah. It's more about actually the food and feeding yourself the right things. So what do you do to get on that path? You're talking about snowballs?
Yep.
Where do you find and what do you do with the first snowball?
Okay. The very first thing we need to think about is abundance. We know from our good old caveman back in those days that we are built for feast and famine.
Mm-hmm.
When we are in famine, and that can be famine of love, that can be famine of water, that can be famine of excitement, food, anything. Whenever we put ourselves into that stress state, we will hold on to things and struggle to survive. And the body is really good at protecting us from that. We need to move out of that protective mode. Okay, so the very first thing I say to people is we need to lose this mindset of cutting things out. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean that we can eat anything that we want if we're talking about nutrition. It doesn't mean that. What I like people to do is think about, here's this food. Is it providing me with the nutrition that I need? Now, it can be general. Is it protein? Is it good fats? Is it minerals? Is it polyphenols? Is it, you know, antioxidants? It can be anything. But is it going to serve us by putting it in our mouth? Now, if you're eating good, nutritious food, you can really eat as much of it as you want. Now, from a keto perspective, we all know there's essential amino acids. So essential, we need to eat protein because we can't provide it. Essential fatty acids, we need to have good fats because our bodies can't make those things themselves. And that's what our gut bacteria helps us to do. And there's vitamins and minerals and things like that. There's no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. So when we're talking about nutrition and keto, for instance, we don't actually have to have carbohydrates. There are a few cell types in the body that require carbohydrates, like there's a couple in the eyes, a couple in the brain, but our liver does that for us. It makes glycogen out of the protein we eat. So we don't have to worry. Now, that's not to say I personally am saying cut out all carbohydrates. I'm not, because they do offer sources of other nutrients. And that's where looking at net carbs versus total carbs comes into it. One of the major factors and failures in a lot of keto people I see is what I like to term internet keto. They get online and they read, you know, they get onto various high-profile influencers that talk about all carbs being bad. Now, we do need those fibers for survival, for our gut health. Because it can be quite difficult to get that 30 different, you know, vegetables a week, for instance, especially when you are new to, say, ketogenic eating and you're wanting to keep your carb content low, I find that it's easier and it's possible to supplement with a specific prebiotic fiber that is, it needs to be a blend. And that's where a lot of these supplements come undone in my mind, is they have one or two fibers in them, which do work. They all work really well, but they expand one or two populations of bacteria. Whereas we've got a big, long gut, we need to feed all of it. Because if you feed one lot, the others are still starving. And that causes disruptions in itself. So there are, well, there's one in particular that I use a lot that is a blend of 8 or 9 different fibers, which is perfectly blended so that it's almost like a time release capsule, except that it's actually a powder that feeds all the gut bacteria all the way down.
It's always a cat in my life. Sorry, if you're listening, My cat has decided to come and press the S on the keyboard. So I guess a lot of the time, I mean, because his gut, how long's the gut?
Long.
It's long, right? Yeah.
So meters and meters and meters.
Does that mean the bottom bits in the gut miss out on stuff?
Funnily enough, the little amounts of fiber, the short fibers seem to feed the top and the longer fibers feed the bottom. We tend to eat more longer fibers. So it's actually the top of the lower bowel that misses out more than the bottom. But regardless, so diversity, as I said. But the one thing with respect to keto, number one, stressing about it, stress is a major killer of gut bacteria. We need to look at other factors as well. Stress is one of them. Medications are a killer. I'm not suggesting that you come off your medication, of course, but you need to be aware that medications, we're talking, well, obviously we know about antibiotics, and even a five-day course of antibiotics can disrupt your microbiome for 2 years.
Wow, 2 years.
2 years. Oh, it can be really hard to repopulate. And some species, if they die out, short of a fecal transplant, which is a whole other podcast, it takes a long time to regenerate. Certainly worth doing, because this really has a bearing on aging as well. And I will release lots of different facts and trivia, I think. There's so much facts and trivia on gut health that's really interesting too. But medications, the biggest one, and it's one that a lot of people just kind of turn to because they think it's innocuous, are the reflux drugs, the Gaviscons and the proton pump inhibitors. They are a major killer of gut health. And, of course, if your gut health's bad, your reflux gets worse. So whilst you get symptomatic relief, you're actually making the problem worse.
So what you're saying is if you look after your gut, you can actually, you don't need that stuff.
No. If you look after your gut, your actual physical gut, forget the microbiome, your gut will heal. And, I mean, gastrointestinal permeability, you know, leaky gut is responsible for, you know, things like IBS and Crohn's and things like that. Major driver of autoimmune disease. Now, I'm seeing, as an expert in immunology and autoimmunity, I obviously see a lot of people, but the snowballing of the presentation of people with autoimmune disease is out of control at the minute.
Wow.
So we really need, looking at gut health initially is absolutely key to trying to get some of that under control.
And do you think that we've gone that way because of what happened, you know, our food pyramids just escalating on us, like sugar and processed food?
Absolutely. There's no doubt. And if anyone hasn't watched the film Fat Fiction, I suggest you do. That can be found at fatfiction.movie. So it's actually easy. I can remember that one. But it's also our desire for a quick fix.
Yeah.
And medication. And all largely, apart from antibiotics, which actually do treat a problem, and sometimes we need antibiotics, I'm not disputing that. Apart from antibiotics, the majority of drugs that we get from our doctors are only for symptomatic relief. They don't address what's actually going on.
Yeah, and I think that is definitely the issue, isn't it? Like our medical system addresses the symptoms, not the cause.
And that's right.
We know that our food pyramid, like we've just been getting sicker and fatter, and now we've got all this medication. And I heard somewhere, I think it was low carb down under, statins, so given to reduce cholesterol.
Don't get me started.
let's do that on another podcast.
Please.
I think it had life expectancy extra 4 days from a lifetime of taking these statins.
Yes.
And, you know, they're treating something that shouldn't really even be treated, but, you know, that's the leftovers from the food pyramid flawed research, da-di-da-di-da.
If I can give you a quick little snippet with respect to that, statins kill me. The major...
Literally, pardon the pun.
I don't understand. In fact, we should probably leave that for another podcast, but I don't understand. Low-density lipoproteins, our bad cholesterol, is the primary ingredient for our ability to make steroidal hormones. We can't make estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, cortisol, aldosterone, all these really important hormones, unless we have cholesterol.
And what do statins do?
Trying to reduce it.
Yeah.
Now, with respect to heart disease, which is why statins came into favour, with respect to clogged arteries, after taking years and years of statins, if you reduce your clogged artery load by 1%, the doctors think that's miraculous. And that's, you know, what a wonder drug. Another study revealed that if you cut out lectins from your diet over like a 2-year period, you can reduce that sort of thing, like the clogging of your arteries, by 50%. Now, that was a small study. It may not happen with everyone because we all have different genetic susceptibilities and things like that. But 1%, 50%. Anyway, wow. That is a much larger conversation.
Yeah, that's definitely a whole other episode of this podcast. If you guys want a bit more information on the research of the statins and cholesterol, Paul Mason is a young Australian doctor who explains this stuff extremely well. And you'll find him on Low Carb Down Under on their website. He's got the sauce as well. Yeah, he's fantastic. So you touched on a couple of really interesting things. And before we go, I just wanted to, I mean, that statin stuff, you know, and cholesterol, that is a whole can of worms right there. Suffice to know that when we muck around with our gut health, and we muck around with lowering cholesterol that's supposed to be there that wasn't caused by fat, we muck around with our hormones. What you mentioned, that a ton of hormones are made in the gut, so serotonin, the happy stuff, all the melatonin. What else happens in the gut to do with hormones?
Oh, ever so much. We need, for hormone production, we need amino acids. And there are specific amino acids that then convert to make the hormones that we need. There are basic ones, you know, tyrosine makes tryptophan, tryptophan makes melatonin, it makes lots of different things. So we need to make sure that we can digest the proteins to get the basic ingredients so the gut bacteria can make the hormones. So digestion itself requires a healthy gut. But a healthy gut requires good digestion. You go ahead.
I was going to say, if people are listening going, oh, well, that's all very well, but I don't know if I have a healthy gut or not, what are some of the things that people could look for that might give them an indication that their gut is struggling?
Absolutely. Okay. So I have a bit of a quiz that I give, a form that I fill out, get clients to fill out. So there are quite a few. You need to think about your, it's a naturopath's love, bowel movements.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you empty properly? Do you experience lower abdominal pain that's relieved by going to the toilet or passing gas? Are you constipated or do you have diarrhea? Do you have bad breath? Do you need to use laxatives? Do you have reflux? Now, then we can get a little bit more diverse, I guess. You know, do you have pain in your joints? Nutritional deficiencies, you know, do you have a deficiency in B12, zinc, iron, vitamin D? Things like, have you been diagnosed with autoimmune diseases or Crohn's disease, psoriasis, rosacea, skin conditions? A big one, and this has a bearing on a couple of things, not only gut health, but and chronic inflammation, obviously, but also how we use the fats that we eat. And that's another conversation we should have. Not all fats are made equal. And when you're concentrating on fats with ketogenic diet, you need to get a balance right as well. And that's really huge. But if you don't have that balance right, brain fog, depression, anxiety. So whilst you might think that you're doing a good job at controlling even your gut health, if you've still got symptoms, there's still something going on. It may be a bacterial overgrowth in your gut, but it may also be that you don't have your essential fatty acids balanced, which also contributes to inflammation, but also contributes to how the cells communicate and how they can make the energy that they need or express the genes they need to and all of that sort of thing. So that's another conversation. We could spend a year together, Emma.
Yeah, we absolutely could. Oh, you are just such a wealth of information. So let me summarize, like before we go, let me summarize what I think you've said. Looking after the gut means that you have better sleep, you have better hormones, you have better mood, you have less brain fog. And to do that, we need balances of protein, fat, and good quality fiber-filled carbohydrates.
Tons of veggies.
Great. Good. So not the starchy type. We want the fiber-filled things like broccoli, cauliflower, corn, peas, beans, that sort of stuff.
When we're talking about gut health and feeding our gut bacteria, it is actually the starchy ones that are good.
Is it?
But what we need to do is turn it into resistant starch.
Okay.
Now, for instance, now I'm not suggesting if you're keto, because it may well knock you out of keto, especially if you're newer. As you eat low carb or very low carb for years and years and years, your tolerance to these things builds up. But for instance, cooking a potato, if you eat a potato, we know spikes your blood sugar like no man's land. Glycemic load of 100. If you cool that potato, some of it becomes resistant starch. So, and that potato starch, as is green banana starch and things like that, are amazingly good for gut bacteria. But okay, that's why I suggest, especially if people are new to keto and they want to keep on top of their carbohydrates, yes, eat all your lovely cucumbers and your rockets and all the things that are easy to eat, and eat lots of different varieties, whatever you can. But it's often good to supplement with these prebiotic fibers that are blended so that you have a little bit of potato starch, but you don't have to have the non-resistant potato with it.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So interesting that cooled starchy carbs, oh, they would be digested differently, I suppose, because if they're fiber-resistant starch, then that takes a lot longer to digest, so you don't get that spike.
And it's very interesting that when you heat a potato, when you cook a potato, it's not resistant. When you cool it, it becomes resistant. If then you heat it again, it stays resistant.
Ooh, so we're eating cool potatoes.
So cool. Reheat your potatoes.
There you go.
Now, realistically, if you're new to keto and you're trying to keep under 20 grams of net carbs a day, even doing that's probably going to put you over.
What I say to people in my course, like when I'm teaching, is that if you have something, you can always test your blood sugar or your ketones with the blood testing strips.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like everyone's so different. Like sometimes like rice spikes me, whereas say maybe like a potato, like a quarter of a potato might not, especially if I'm having it with butter or sour cream or something like that, because the fat's slowing it down. So yeah, I mean, people could test that. So that's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that. The other thing I just wanted to reiterate or actually feed back to see if I'm understanding it correctly, other things that hurt the microbiome and the gut health would be stress.
Oh, killer.
Lack of abundance, so lack of a rainbow of food, lack of fiber. And a lack of diversity, I suppose that's abundance. Did I miss anything?
Look, essential fatty acids. We need to get our fats in, our good fats in, of which avocado is brilliant. They're the polyphenols. They're the antioxidants. They'll stop you aging because they're really good in fiber as well. But we need to get our essential fatty acids, primarily our omega-3s, which are actually quite difficult to get in our diet these days due to farming measures. But we need to really look at good fats and particularly polyphenols, so olive oil. There's been some studies that have been done that suggest that we should actually have about a kilogram of extra virgin olive oil a week.
A week?
A week.
Oh, my goodness. And knowing that fat doesn't make us fat, well, that's doable.
Oh, it is. Well, yeah. Liters is quite a lot.
But that is actually a lot. I'm thinking, my gosh, I literally have to ingest it every morning, like by the cup full. So, okay, you mentioned fats. And before we wrap up, places to get the omega-3s, so wild-caught fish, avocados, olive oil.
Yeah, look, I think it's something that I certainly am very passionate about. I'm a bit of an oil freak, so I can give you a lot more information on that. That's not a problem. But the problem with getting omegas these days, for instance, wild-caught fish, is that if we can afford organic wild-caught fish from Norway, cold water, is not around farmed fish, which is why we have a problem in Australia, because we have a lot of farmed fish, and we can ship it into Australia in under the 30 hours that it stops the omegas from degrading, then we're all right. But we can't do that in Australia. Right. The problem with our fish here is that because of the farming methods and farmed fish, and that's the majority of what we get, they're actually fed corn. And corn is full of omega-6s, which are pro-inflammatory. Just so our fish don't have omega-3s in them either, because they're being fed omega-6s. So it is essentially, and I'll call it, and there's a long backstory to this as well, it is virtually impossible to get omega-3s in our diet. The best way of absorbing omega-3s from our diet is having a lot of polyphenols with it, so getting as much olive oil as you can into you.
Avocado and olive oil.
Yeah, because it is the polyphenols which chaperone the omega-3s into the body.
Interesting. And now, so that is,
yeah.
Sorry, you go.
That's why fish oil supplements are useless. They're not worth the money that they're, you know, it's a huge billion-dollar market, but they don't actually do anything. And they're a test to prove my statement. It's no worries about that. But it's life-changing to get that balance right as well.
Yeah, interesting. I think, I mean, that's a whole, I've got a list of things you and I need to talk about.
Let's have a cam.
We always say we're going to do this, so we never quite get around to it. Maybe 2023 is the year where we chat regularly.
Norway. So we can get in Norway, so we can get our cold water fish.
Well, let's duck over to Alaska as well, because that would be nice. I'd like to do that.
Yep.
Okay. So, wow, there's so much to talk about here, but we'll round it off here. So if people want to find you and they want to follow you, where's the best place for them to go?
The best place is probably Facebook or Instagram. I'm the No Nonsense Naturopath. You should be able to find me there. Shoot me a message, shoot me questions. I am very happy to answer your questions and point you in directions of studies or, you know, gems of wisdom.
Amazing. Right? We have plenty of gems of wisdom.
Yeah, I also have a practice in Ormo on the Gold Coast, but I do practice Australia and New Zealand wide. So you can get in touch with me that way too.
Fantastic. And, yeah, I think if you guys, so Rochelle Wade is a naturopath, which you already know, the no-nonsense naturopath. You can absolutely reach out to her for if you've got anything you want to clarify around this, or you can reach out to me and I'll put you in touch with her. And was there anything you wanted to add that we missed? I'm laughing because it's like.
Hippocrates, who's the father of medicine, believe that everyone can have perfect health. He also said that all disease begins in the gut. His belief was it was a physician's role to look at their patient and get them to include everything that they need for perfect health, and to identify and get the patient to remove everything that was detrimental. That's what I try to do. Have a think about how our health is in general and how as a society we function and how far we've actually gone away from that. It's as simple as providing your body with everything that it needs to function amazingly to get back to perfect health.
Yeah, well, on that note, I mean, that's such good advice. And on that note, we will tie a ribbon on this and pull the bow next time. So next time we need to chat about statins and cholesterol. We need to talk about fats, oils and omegas, because I know you're super passionate and have a lot of knowledge around those omegas, the brain stuff and how that all links up as well. So we'll park those. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rochelle, and I'll talk to you soon.
See you later.
Bye.